Hello and welcome to the Pediatric Critical Care Medicine Audio Abstracts. I'm Dr. Erin Bennett, and on behalf of PCCM, I'm happy to present this audio recording of the research abstracts that appear in this month's issue. Let's get started. Abstract 1 is a clinical investigation article by Okochi et al. Follow-up brain MRI after carotid reconstruction or ligation in neonatal veno-arterial extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, single-center retrospective cohort from 2009 to 2022. Objectives. In neonates, the carotid artery can be ligated or reconstructed at the time of decannulation from veno-arterial extracorporeal membrane oxygenation, or VA ECMO. However, there is a paucity of data on the neurologic outcomes of one approach versus the other. We therefore aim to compare the brain MRI of VA ECMO patients who had either undergone carotid reconstruction or ligation at the time of decannulation in our NICU. Design. Single-center retrospective study. Setting, tertiary level neonatal care, that is, level 4 NICU. Patients, neonates younger than 28 days old who survived to VA ECMO decannulation and underwent routine post-decannulation brain MRI between June 2009 and September 2022. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. 81 patients were included in this study, 38 of 81 or 47% with carotid reconstruction and 43 of 81 or 53% who underwent carotid ligation. We failed to identify associations between decannulation strategy and demographics, ECMO indication, cannulation duration, head ultrasound abnormalities during ECMO, and survival to hospital discharge. Overall, 54 of 81 patients or 67% displayed at least one abnormality on post-decannulation brain MRI. We failed to identify an association between decannulation strategy and focal ischemic lesions, MRI injury score, and proportion with intraventricular hemorrhage. However, there was an association between strategy and grade 2 to 4 IVH in 10 of 38 in reconstruction versus 3 of 43 in ligation, with a mean difference of 19.3%, a 95% confidence interval of 3.1 to 35.6%, and a p-value equal to 0.02. Conclusions. In our neonatal VA ECMO series from 2009 to 2022, follow-up brain MRI shows a high frequency of abnormalities or lesions. Overall, we failed to identify an association between decannulation strategy, id-est carotid ligation or reconstruction, and proportion with ischemic findings. However, there appears to be an association between carotid reconstruction and higher grade IVH. Further studies are needed to help with decision-making at the time of decannulation to discern the mechanisms underlying the radiographic differences we identified in our series and to investigate the connection between structural changes and long-term neurocognitive outcomes. Abstract 2 is a featured original research article by Kopana Olmos et al. Sepsis bundle adherence and early vasopressor administration in pediatric septic shock. Secondary analysis of outcomes in a 2023 multicenter cohort in Bolivia. Objectives. In a cohort of children with septic shock, we evaluated the association between vasoactive agent use within 1 hour of starting our sepsis bundle and mortality. Secondarily, we assessed the relationship between sepsis bundle adherence and mortality and other outcomes. Design. Non-pre-planned secondary analysis of a national multicenter dataset collected in a resource-limited setting. Setting. Dataset from 14 centers in Bolivia collected between January 2023 and December 2023. Patients, children under 15 years old with sepsis or septic shock defined using altitude-adjusted Phoenix criteria. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We included 268 patients in this secondary analysis with median age 17 months and interquartile range 6 to 63 months. The sepsis bundle was used within 3 hours in 131 of 268 patients, or 49%. Vasopressors were used in 102 of 268 patients, or 38%, and 85 of 102, or 83%, had received peripheral administration within the 1 hour of persistent hypotension without any record of adverse events. Early vasopressor use within 1 hour of septic shock recognition and antibiotic administration within 1 hour of sepsis recognition were independently associated with lower odds of mortality. The adjusted odds ratio for early vasopressor use was 0.49 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.28 to 0.89, and the adjusted odds ratio for antibiotic administration was 0.49 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.24 to 0.71. Both p-values were equal to 0.001. Failure to complete the sepsis bundle within 3 hours was associated with greater odds of mortality and greater odds of longer interval before emergency consultation. The adjusted odds ratio for mortality was 3.61, with a 95% confidence interval of 1.64 to 7.91 and a p-value equal to 0.001. And the adjusted odds ratio for a longer interval before emergency consultation was 1.04, with a 95% confidence interval of 1.01 to 1.07 and a p-value equal to 0.023. Conclusions. Early initiation of vasoactive agents in children with septic shock and timely sepsis bundle completion were independently associated with lower hazard of mortality. Historically, in Bolivia in 2023, bundle adherence was suboptimal, yet feasible interventions were associated with greater odds of better outcomes in pediatric sepsis and septic shock. Abstract 3 is a featured original research article by Shah et al. Withdrawal of life-sustaining treatment in children managed in 9 PICUs in the United States, a secondary analysis of the death 1 hour after terminal extubation, or DONATE, dataset from 2009 to 2021. Objectives. To describe medical management surrounding withdrawal of life-sustaining therapy in 9 U.S. PICUs. Design. Retrospective secondary analysis of the death 1 hour after terminal extubation or DONATE cohort from 2009 to 2021 assessing usage patterns of the following: 1. Analgesics and sedatives, 2. Vasoactive infusions, 3. Neuromuscular blockade, and 4. Post-extubation respiratory support. Setting: 9 U.S. PICUs. Patients: children and adolescents 0 to 21 years old who had died after withdrawal of life-sustaining therapy, including discontinuation of invasive mechanical ventilation. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of 905 patients, 680, or 75.1%, died within 1 hour of withdrawal of life-sustaining therapies. Opioids were administered in 721 of 905 patients, or 79.7%. Across sites, the range was 68 to 89%, with a p-value less than 0.001. We did not observe a temporal trend. Benzodiazepines were used in 507 of 905 patients, or 56%, with a site range of 41 to 66% and a p-value less than 0.001, with lower odds of usage per year, with an odds ratio of 0.95 per year, a 95% confidence interval of 0.9 to 0.99 per year, and a p-value equal to 0.04. Dexmedetomidine was used in 140 of 905 patients, or 15.5%, with sites range of 4 to 21% and a p-value equal to 0.002, with greater odds of usage per year, with an odds ratio of 1.16 per year, a 95% confidence interval of 1.05 to 1.27 per year, and a p-value equal to 0.004. Vasoactive infusions were discontinued in 458 of 520 patients, or 88.1%, receiving this medication, with a site range of 59 to 100% and a p-value less than 0.001, with greater odds of discontinuation per year, with an odds ratio of 1.15 per year, a 95% confidence interval of 1.04 to 1.26 per year, and a p-value equal to 0.007. Neuromuscular blockade was used in 46 of 905 patients, or 5.1%, with a site range of 0 to 13% and a p-value less than 0.001, with greater odds of usage per year, with an odds ratio of 1.23 per year, a 95% confidence interval of 1.08 to 1.4 per year, and a p-value equal to 0.002. Use of any post-extubation respiratory support occurred in 50 of 905 patients, or 5.5%, and we did not identify an association with site or year-on-year trend. Conclusions. The 2009 to 2021 DONATE dataset shows substantial institutional and temporal variability in withdrawal of life-sustaining therapy practices across our 9 collaborative PICUs in the United States. Future studies should focus on understanding the drivers of variability to improve the consistency and quality of end-of-life management. Abstract 4 is a clinical investigation article by Toomey et al. Financial Consequences of COVID-19 on United States PICUs, a 2017 to 2023 study using the Pediatric Health Information System and the Virtual Pediatric System Database. Objective: to evaluate the financial consequences of admission to PICU during the COVID-19 pandemic in the United States. Design: retrospective cohort study. Setting: PICUs in the Pediatric Health Information System, or PHIS, and Virtual Pediatric System, or VPS, databases. Patients: PICU admissions in children younger than 18 years from January 2017 to March 2023. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We queried 29 diagnostic categories using two unlinked national databases, FIS and VPS. Costs were calculated from FIS charges using the hospital-specific cost-to-charge ratio. From FIS, median charges and costs per PICU day were determined for each diagnosis, year, region, and hospital status. The median charges and costs per PICU days were matched to VPS PICU days. Multivariable mixed modeling was used, controlling for center, length of stay, and severity of illness, which included use of mechanical ventilation, extracorporeal membrane oxygenation support, and pediatric risk of mortality score. The primary outcomes were PICU charges and costs per day. The secondary outcomes were bed days, cumulative charges, and costs. There were 484,328 FIS and 331,740 VPS encounters. Percent change in encounter level costs per PICU day increased at a greater rate than encounter level charges when comparing pre-COVID-19 to COVID-19 years after controlling for length of stay, severity of illness, and diagnosis. Percent change in encounter level costs was 8.9% with a 95% confidence interval of 8.8 to 9.1% and a p-value less than 0.001. Percent change in encounter level charges was 4.1% with a 95% confidence interval of 1.2 to 7.2 and a p-value equal to 0.006. Bed days for bronchiolitis, asthma, pneumonia, and respiratory failure decreased by 28 to 94% compared with the average pre-COVID-19 years. After combining all diagnoses, bed days decreased by 70,100 or 33%, and PICU charges decreased by $1.2 billion during COVID year one when compared with the average pre-COVID-19 years. Conclusions. The COVID-19 pandemic exposed the financial vulnerability of FIS and VPS contributing PICUs in the United States. Bed days are a key driver to maintaining financial margins. Abstract 5 is a clinical investigation article by Alexander et al. Child and parent outcomes in the 2018-2019 depict differences in access to emergency pediatric intensive care and care during transport study. 12-month follow-up data. Objective. The 2018-2019 depict differences in access to emergency pediatric intensive care and care during transport study in United Kingdom had a follow-up questionnaire component 12 months after PICU admission. We now report the quality of life findings in the children and mental health outcomes, IDEST, anxiety, depression, and post-traumatic stress disorder or PTSD in the parents. Design. Depict cohort follow-up study using questionnaires and registered with clinicaltrials.gov in 2017. Setting. PICU transport teams and 24 PICUs admitting children transported between January 2018 and January 2019 in United Kingdom. Patients. Depict cohort, N equals 419, depending on missingness, children and related parents and caregivers with 2020 outcome questionnaires. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. We evaluated parental proxy reported questionnaires covering their child's baseline characteristics, pediatric quality of life, or PEDS-QL, and health utilities index, or HUI-2, and healthcare utilization. We also assessed parent questionnaires testing for any anxiety, depression, and PTSD. At the time of transfer, 225 of 419, or 53.7% of the children were aged under 1 year. Most required transfer for respiratory reasons, and 194 of 419, or 46.3%, had pre-existing comorbidities. At 12-month post-PICU admission, around half of the children with a baseline comorbidity had impaired overall PEDS-QL quality of life scores, 57.1%, or 105 of 184, compared with around a quarter of previously healthy children, 23.1%, or 49 of 212. Both PEDS-QL and HUI-2 scores were significantly worse for children with baseline comorbidities. At follow-up, 105 of 340 or 30.9% of parents met screening thresholds for anxiety, 74 of 340 or 21.8% for depression, and 84 of 298 or 28.2% for PTSD. Parent anxiety, depression, and PTSD were correlated with poor quality of life scores for their child. Conclusions. The 2020 12-month outcome findings of the 2018 to 2019 DEPICT study highlights post-PICU impairments in child quality of life and high rates of parental mental health issues. Further study of contemporary child and family support, as well as the optimal model for follow-up care, are needed. Abstract 6 is a clinical investigation article by Clausen et al. Effective positive end expiratory pressure on cardiac index and right ventricular performance in ventilated children post-cardiac surgery. Objective: lower positive end expiratory pressure, or PEEP, is commonly suggested in congenital heart disease patients to prevent hemodynamic impairment and right ventricular dysfunction. We sought to study the effect of different levels of PEEP on cardiac index, lung mechanics, and right ventricular function in subjects after cardiac surgery. Design: prospective single-center physiology study conducted in a tertiary pediatric cardiac ICU between November 2023 and July 2024. Setting: operating room, OR, and cardiac ICU, CICU. Patients included subjects younger than 5 years post-cardiac surgery for congenital heart disease. Interventions: 4 consecutive PEEP levels as follows. Baseline or PEEP start, high PEEP or baseline plus 4 centimeters of water or PEEP high, low PEEP or baseline minus 4 centimeters of water or PEEP low, and return to baseline or PEEP end. Measurements in 58 subjects, cardiac index and right ventricular function, static and dynamic compliance, and transpulmonary pressures were measured at each PEEP level and with constant driving pressure. Of these subjects, 81% underwent surgery with cardiopulmonary bypass. The median age was 4.9 months, and 55% of subjects were male. The mean baseline PEEP was 6.2 centimeters of water with a standard deviation of 1.4. The mean PEEP high was 10.2 centimeters of water with a standard deviation of 1.4, and the mean PEEP low was 3.3 centimeters of water with a standard deviation of 0.7. Main results. Overall, cardiac index and right ventricular performance increased significantly with PEEP high, with a p-value less than 0.01. Cardiac index decreased in 7 of 58 patients, or 12%, with PEEP high, and in 18 of 58 patients, or 31%, with PEEP low. Directional change in measures of right ventricular performance and static compliance over time was generally concordant, with manipulation of PEEP both improved or worsened together independent of the underlying lesion. Sensitivity analyses showed that the results remained consistent regardless of the location of the measurement, OR versus CICU, whether inhaled nitric oxide or milrinone was used, whether right ventricular outflow tract obstruction was present, and whether cardiopulmonary bypass was used. Conclusions. In children with congenital heart disease who underwent biventricular repair, cardiac index, right ventricular function, and static compliance generally improved with higher PEEP, indicating pulmonary recruitment. Changes in cardiac performance and static compliance were closely related, with both improving or worsening together with manipulation of PEEP. This study supports the use of PEEP to optimize lung volume and cardiopulmonary interactions after cardiac surgery. Abstract 7 is a clinical investigation article by Capretta et al. Reducing Acute Kidney Injury in Critically Ill Pediatric Patients, Quality Improvement Project Targeting Nephrotoxic Medication Exposures. Objective: to reduce acute kidney injury, or AKI, associated with nephrotoxic medication exposure in critically ill pediatric patients through a structured quality improvement initiative. Design: prospective, multi-phase QI project. Setting: a single-center freestanding quaternary care children's hospital. Patients: all patients admitted to the PICU during the study period. Interventions: a three-phase intervention strategy was implemented to increase awareness surrounding nephrotoxic medication exposures in the PICU and their role in subsequent AKI development. Phase 1 introduced a monthly pharmacist-led educational session for resident physicians. Phase 2 incorporated an informational handout review during monthly resident orientations. In Phase 3, clinical pharmacists provided daily notifications to attending physicians for patients meeting nephrotoxic medication exposure criteria, offering timely alternatives and AKI monitoring recommendations. Measurements and main results. Nephrotoxic medication exposure and nephrotoxic-associated AKI rates per 1,000 patient days were measured across pre-intervention and post-intervention periods. From May 1, 2021 to December 31, 2023, a total of 34,631 patient days were included. During this period, 2,410 and 388 patient days respectively satisfied nephrotoxic medication exposure and nephrotoxic medication-associated AKI criteria. This accounted for 1,039 nephrotoxic medication exposure events in 742 patients and 159 nephrotoxic medication-associated AKI episodes in 125 unique patients. Following interventions, nephrotoxic medication exposure rates declined from 30.6 to 26.9 per 1,000 patient days, a 12.4% reduction, and nephrotoxic medication-associated AKI rates decreased from 5.6 to 2.5 per 1,000 patient days, a 55% reduction. Conclusions. Targeted PICU-specific interventions, including routine stakeholder education and pharmacy-driven daily provider notifications, were associated with reductions in nephrotoxic medication exposure and subsequent nephrotoxic medication-associated AKI rates in critically ill patients. Efforts to integrate and sustain these strategies at the institutional level are currently in progress. Abstract 8 is a clinical investigation article by Day Gaudenzi et al. The Airway, Breathing, Circulation, Plan, Risk, Options, or ABC Pro Handover Tool in the PICU, Retrospective Evaluation of Pre- versus Post-Implementation and Occurrence Rate of Cardiac Arrests from 2020 to 2023. Objectives. Healthcare improvement studies indicate a potential to reduce cardiac arrests in the PICU through anticipatory care and shared awareness. We developed a structured risk assessment and anticipation tool, IDS, the Airway, Breathing, Circulation, Plan, Risk, Options, or ABC Pro, for PICU patient handover and assessed the impact on cardiac arrest occurrence rate. Design. Single-center retrospective healthcare improvement audit of before versus after ABC Pro tool implementation. Setting. Multidisciplinary 25-bed PICU of the University Children's Hospital, Zurich. Patients. Patients younger than 18 years admitted to the PICU from January 2020 to September 2023, whose parents and guardians had not refused consent for general use of personal PICU administrative data. Interventions. We implemented the ABC Pro handover tool, and the primary outcome was the occurrence rate of cardiac arrest necessitating cardiopulmonary resuscitation before versus after the implementation. Cardiac arrest incidence was calculated per 1,000 PICU days using Poisson regressions adjusted for age, sex, and pediatric index of mortality. Measurements and main results. During 4,370 PICU admissions, or 21,804 PICU days, there were 63 cardiac arrests in 59 patients. Of these, 43 occurred pre, or 12,911 PICU days, and 8 occurred post-implementation, or 6,156 PICU days. The adjusted cardiac arrest occurrence rate pre versus post-implementation was 2.9 versus 1.2 per 1,000 PICU days, with an adjusted rate ratio of 0.42 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.2 to 0.88. Overall, 0.47 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.2 to 1.1 among cardiac, and 0.48 with a 95% confidence interval of 0.14 to 1.6 among non-cardiac patients. Cardiac arrests decreased most in cardiac surgical patients with an adjusted rate ratio of 0.23 and a 95% confidence interval of 0.06 to 0.96. However, we failed to identify a difference in cardiac arrest mortality pre versus post implementation, 17 of 41 versus 1 of 8, with a mean percentage difference of 29%, a 95% confidence interval of 2 to 56%, and a p-value equal to 0.12. Conclusions. The ABC Pro PICU handover tool provides a structured approach to risk assessment and anticipation and may be associated with a decreased cardiac arrest occurrence rate in the PICU, with effects most pronounced in cardiac surgical patients. Abstract 9 is a clinical investigation article by Green et al. Ketamine procedural sedation in 38,910 children, frequency and predictors of critical and high-risk events. Objectives. Ketamine is a commonly administered sedative to facilitate painful procedures in children, and recommendations for its optimal practice require accurate estimates of the frequency and nature of adverse events. Our objective was to assess the frequency of critical and high-risk adverse events associated with ketamine as the primary sedative, and to identify clinical predictors of such adverse events. Design. Retrospective analysis of a prospective registry of 38,910 children receiving ketamine for procedural sedation from July 1, 2004 to July 1, 2024. Setting. Critical care units, sedation units, emergency departments, radiology suites, and other locations providing ketamine sedation in 84 participating institutions. Patients. Children receiving ketamine used as their primary sedative, defined as ketamine as a single agent or with adjunctive benzodiazepines or dexmedetomidine, but excluding co-administered primary sedative agents such as propofol. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Of 38,910 unique sedation encounters of ketamine as a primary sedative, there were 15 critical adverse events, 0.04%, or 1 per 2,594 sedations, cardiac arrest, 1, aspiration, 3, intubation, 8, anaphylaxis, 1, and laryngeal mask airway, 2. There were no reported deaths or descriptions of any permanent adverse outcomes. The strongest independent risk factor was upper respiratory infection, but only in those also receiving benzodiazepines or dexmedetomidine. Other predictors were opioids and, to a lesser degree, age younger than 6 months or older than 10 years. We found no patterns of association with severe underlying illness, obstructive sleep apnea, preemptive supplemental oxygen, ketamine route intramuscular versus IV, or ketamine dose. Conclusions. In this largest study of ketamine as a primary procedural sedative, we found that critical and high-risk adverse events were rare. The strongest risk factors were presence of an upper respiratory infection in association with added benzodiazepines or dexmedetomidine, and when opioids were also administered. Abstract 10 is a PCCM conference report and expert panel by Penck et al. Good Practice Concepts in Pediatric Critical Care Point-of-Care Ultrasound, a modified Delphi Consensus Initiative. Objective. We assembled a work group within the Pediatric Research Collaborative on Critical Ultrasound, or PERCUS, a subgroup of the Pediatric Acute Lung Injury and Sepsis Investigators, or PALISI, to define early guidance for point-of-care ultrasound, or POCUS, institutional practice and foster future comprehensive guidelines for its broad adoption in pediatric critical care medicine. Design. A modified Delphi method was used for creating the statements. The first meeting was an open proposal session for workgroup members to suggest items for consideration. This was followed by a cycle of voting for levels of agreement along a 7-point Likert type scale. Items were reviewed, with only items receiving a score of greater than or equal to 6 progressing to the next stage of voting and lower scoring items reconsidered, with only consensus items proceeding to the next stage for additional rounds of voting until consensus was reached. Setting. Multi-institutional, multidisciplinary workgroup of experts on POCUS organized within PERCUS as a subgroup of PALISI. There were no interventions. Measurements and main results. Consensus was obtained for 25 recommendations across 5 domains: clinical application, quality assurance, equipment, education, and research. Conclusions. We report consensus recommendations for institutions on clinical use, educational programs, quality assurance, technical requirements, and future research opportunities for the adoption of pediatric critical care medicine POCUS. Abstract 11 is a PCCM conference report and expert panel by Lintner Rivera et al., proposing entrustable professional activities for pediatric critical care ultrasound, a modified Delphi consensus approach. Objective: develop a consensus-based framework for point-of-care ultrasound and pediatric critical care or critical care ultrasound education using entrustable professional activities, or EPAs. Design. A modified Delphi method utilizing cycles of meetings and surveys for consensus building. Setting. The endeavor involved members of the Pediatric Research Collaborative on Critical Ultrasound, or PERCUS, a subgroup of the Pediatric Acute Lung Injury and Sepsis, or PALISI, investigators. Subjects. An expert panel consisting of 23 members representing 17 institutions, including diverse healthcare professionals involved in pediatric critical care ultrasound. Interventions. 3 iterative modified Delphi rounds were conducted to propose and refine critical care ultrasound EPAs. Measurements and main results. The endeavor achieved a 74% response rate. 14 EPAs were formulated across 5 domains: cardiac, pulmonary, abdomen, procedures, and vascular, along with 2 consensus opinions on educational content and methods. EPAs were evaluated using 5-point Likert items requiring a median score of greater than or equal to 4.5 for progression. Conclusions. This collaborative effort led to the establishment of 14 EPAs for pediatric critical care ultrasound, offering a structured approach for education and competency assessment in pediatric critical care. This initiative lays the groundwork for evolving standards in pediatric critical care ultrasound education and practice. This concludes the abstracts for the February 2026 issue of Pediatric Critical Care Medicine. Thank you very much for listening. For more journal-related content, including access to the articles mentioned in this recording, please visit pccmjournal.org. Members of the SCCM Pediatric Section receive complimentary access to the PCCM Journal.